Good morning, everyone. I'd like to bring the March 20th, 2019 meeting of the Education Finance Division to order, please.
Yeah.
Let's start with moving the minutes from the March 13th and March 19th meetings. We'll start with March 13th. They are in your packets. Representative Sandell, would you move the March 13th minutes?
I would, Mr. Chair. Thank you. I move the minutes from March 13th minute to be adopted.
Thank you very much. Any discussion on the Sandell motion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Representative Bennett, you are reading over the minutes. I can see it. Would you like to make a motion on the March 19th minutes, please?
I do, Mr. Chair. So moved.
Thank you very much, Representative Bennett. Any discussion to the Bennett motion? Oh, Representative Erickson.
Yes, thank you, Mr.
Eagle
Chair.
Eyes.
The style was not followed that you are used to using in your minutes. So I would just check to make sure those technical changes are made, because I noticed there's no "the bill was laid over," which has been the style you followed. So
all right.
You think. I think you had a substitute, so.
We did. So perhaps the motion would, or the understanding would be to allow staff to make the technical changes.
Yeah, your style changes that.
Very good.
That you've been using.
All right. AP style, MLA, I'm not sure, but.
Daphne style.
Daphne style. Ooh, I like that. Wasn't there a song like that? We're going to move on. Any appropriate discussion to the Bennett motion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you all. Representative Olson, you were here a moment ago. There she is. Very good. Okay. Very good. Representative Olson, welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. Thanks for having us here to hear House File 1207. And I do have a DE as well.
So let's do this in two steps. Representative Richardson, would you be so good as to move House File 1207 to be before the committee for possible inclusion in a future division report?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Richardson. Then, Representative Richardson, would you also be so good as to move Representative Olson's, let me get the, DE2, 1207 DE2 amendment.
So moved.
Thank you, Representative Richardson. Representative Olson, could you just describe, I do understand this is an author's amendment, but could you describe the amendment for us briefly?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And with this amendment, it really gets it to where the bill needs to go. House File 1207 is addressing the unique special education funding challenges for three school districts, Duluth, Rochester, and Faribault. And this work is really coming back to we want to do the right thing. And several years ago, the legislature devised a funding base for special education. And in the case of that, the outcome was not what we envisioned for Duluth and for Faribault and Rochester. And the special education formula, it was artificially low base revenue year in 2016 and caused by the charter school tuition impacts. And so it limits the amount of reimbursable revenue. And this has caused really a tremendous deficit for the Duluth Public Schools, consuming the entire $4.3 million reserve in 4 years. So this DE amendment really addresses the problem, and as Duluth is an outlier, as well as Rochester and Faribault. So it adjusts the 2016 base calculation by $1 million. It provides one-time reimbursement of $3.2 million to redress the flawed base calculation, and it limits future expenditures using a direct wide average formula with average charter school costs.
Thank you very much. Members, that was a brief review of the author's DE2 amendment. Any further discussion? Hearing none, this gets the bill in the form that you would prefer. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Representative Olson, to your bill as amended, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And I just want to say thank you to the co-authors on this bill, a number that are on this committee, as this really impacts several communities throughout the state. And just with that, I really did, in my explanation of the DE, really walk through the problem that this bill is trying to address, as well as the solution we're working towards here. So I think with that, I would probably just turn it over to the testifiers. With me today, I have Bill Gronseth, the superintendent of the Duluth Public Schools, and and John Carlson, the Executive Director of Finance for the Rochester Public Schools.
All right. Mr. Grandstaff, or Superintendent, excuse me, Superintendent Grandstaff, welcome to the committee. Please state your name to the record, for the record, and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. I'm Bill Grandstaff, Superintendent Duluth Public Schools. Chair Dabney, honorable committee members, thank you for the opportunity to speak with you again today. We do so appreciate the work that you do every day to support education and the work that you're doing to look into educational funding. The new formula that was put in place in 2016 has benefited many school districts across the district. But as you've heard through reports, as you've heard from people coming to you, there are outliers within that formula. Duluth is at the top of the list of those outliers. In 2016, specifically when the base was set, our tuition billing was significantly different than past years, and the results set our base over $1 million below where it would have been. Where it would have been any other year. Because special ed, special education funding is a year behind, we didn't find out until April of 2017 that in FY16 we had spent almost $2 million more than we had planned. The effect was our reserves took an immediate hit. And then in response, we have cut back on our programming, we've cut back on our services, we've cut back on our general education spending, actually keeping our increase to 1% to try to catch up. In that same time, and I want to preface this by saying we have had positive relationships with private, parochial, and charter schools for decades. We pride ourselves in working together. However, in that same time frame, one of our charter schools increased their spending 18%, increasing their tuition billing to us by 38%. And so, again, we ended up with this unexpected expense a year after the fact. Our reserves take another hit. And so we have been working diligently to live within our own means, to live within our own budget, but we keep taking a step backwards. This bill accomplishes three things. It corrects our base to better reflect our actual costs and tuition by using the FY15 amount. It provides a one-time payment to help us make up some ground on our reserves and have us have some money in our reserves. Right now, we have less than 1% of our budget left in reserves. If we have another unexpected increase, we will be in the negative. So it's important that we be able to do that. This also prevents charter schools from unlimited spending. It does allow some leeway for them to have expenses above our own, but it also offers some controls and levels the playing field at least a bit. We know that there are several ways you're looking at correcting the inequities associated with special education funding. We believe House File 1207 goes a long way to getting us down the road of some of those equities between public schools and charter schools and special education and general education. We thank you for your time, and I thank you for the opportunity to speak today.
Superintendent, thank you. Mr. Carlson, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair and representatives. My name is John Carlson. I am the Executive Director of Finance for Rochester Public Schools. It's my pleasure to be here today. Rochester is a growing community, and we serve over 18,000 students in our district. As with most districts, we experience cost increase of about 3% per year, and we've been receiving funding increases on the basic formula of about 2% per year. As a result, we are usually trimming over $1 million of expenditures annually to avoid deficit spending. One area I am proud of as both a parent and an employee is our special education services. I have a son enrolled in special ed. We are serving around 16% of our total students on an individualized education plan. We must maintain these services, not only because it's the law, but it's the right thing to do. A problem we are having, though, is related to special education tuition billing. The law makes us serve the students who come to us. That makes sense. We also get paid through the various funding formulas for doing that. However, we must also pay for those students who live within our district but choose to go elsewhere for their special ed services. This is known as the special education tuition billing. In 2017-2018, our average unreimbursed costs for providing special ed services were about $16 per hour, a number that has been slightly declining as we always work to become more efficient with our budget. We are noticing a growing cost per hour with three public charter schools within our district. Their average rates are anywhere from $19 to $71 per hour. We are billed back those costs, even though we didn't receive any general education aid formula to help subsidize those costs. In the last school year, around this time, we were sent a bill for over $1 million from one such school, which was an increase of $850,000 from the year before. This caught us off guard, to say the least. It sent us down an unfortunate path of cutting our budget by an extra $1 million for the 18-19 school year due to no fault of our own, just a lack of control over how the law works, lack of control over the costs that other districts bill back to us, and chronic underfunding of special education by federal and state government. House File 1207 before you today would help take some of that bite out of our budget. As it is written, there would be a cap on the billing based on the average cost per hour between us and the public charter school. I think this is a fair approach, helps put some constraints on the level of increased spending. While it won't erase the $1.7 million deficit created by tuition billing in our district from the three charter schools, it does have a chance to lower our responsibility by about $200,000. In our district, that means saving 3 to 4 general ed positions for the upcoming school year. Rochester is hopeful this proposed tuition billing formula cap calculation would eventually benefit other districts across the state and help control the rising costs of special ed. Thank you for your time and consideration with this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. We also have a Mr. Tom DeGries who's signed up to testify. Mr. DeGries, please come forward. Have a seat at the table there. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Chair, Committee. I'm Tom DeGree. I'm the Associate Director of Minnesota Association of Charter Schools. I'm here today, this morning, to state my opposition to 1207. Minnesota is where charter schools started 28 years ago, through a bipartisan law, as you know, to allow innovation and choice in our schools. They allow teachers more freedom to try different methods and allow parents the choice of a district that don't fit their students' learning style. I was a St. Paul Public School employee for over 20 years and fully support our state district schools. But after taking the job at Max over 3 years ago, I visited over 160 of the 163 charter schools in our state. And I believe these public schools help fill out our state's options. You know, have you seen the meme about the person who makes $400 an hour telling the person who makes $25 an hour to watch out for the person who's making $10 an hour? Well, these characters, charters feel like the $10 an hour person. As you know, charter schools get the state general revenue, but they receive no local levies or extended day or extended year funding. I visited a charter school yesterday that runs after school and summer school programs out of their general fund revenue. With almost 60,000 students in Minnesota charter schools currently, we have a higher percentage of students of color, a higher percentage of students receiving free and reduced lunch, and about the same percentage of the students receiving special ed services. We hear charters don't have to serve special ed students. That's one of the myths we hear. And also within, we hear charter schools are stealing students and offering Cadillac special ed services. The truth is, we do offer special ed services, as any other public school, and we have licensed teachers, special ed teachers, and many of the students come to the charter school with an IEP already with them. It seems this year we're finally addressing the underfunding of special education. You've heard some bills blaming this on charter schools, but you've also heard a bill like yesterday from St. Cloud that have very few charter schools that are saying they're having a cross-subsidy issue. What this committee is to make long-term bold decisions about our special ed funding that protect our most vulnerable students in our state. MAC opposes House File 1207 because charter schools are statewide, and changing the law for one specific or several specific districts would only lead to more issues. You need to address the real problem, and that is our state special education funding. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. DeGries. This is a public hearing. Is there anyone else in the audience who wishes to testify either for or against House File 1207 as amended? Seeing none, Questions from the committee for the author or testifiers? Representative Sandell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This question is probably directed at Mr. DeVries, but the superintendents and Mr. Carlson might answer as well. First of all, Mr. DeVries, do you know who the authorizer is? Mr. DeVries, do you know who the authorizer is for the charter schools in Rochester and in Duluth that have been discussed this morning?
Mr. DeVries, please come up and somebody grab him a chair and get yourself comfortable.
I do not know the specific authorizer. I could look up and get you that information. There are four charter schools in Rochester and two separate ones in Duluth. So each of those schools could have different authorizers. Currently, there are 13 different authorizers in our state.
Representative Sandell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. DeVries, does the authorizer of a charter school have any responsibility to oversee the finances of the schools?
Mr. DeVries.
The authorizers have a contract with the school to make sure that they're running under proper state law. They don't have an oversight to how they spend their money.
Representative Sandell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is there discussion among the authorizer and the local school district regarding finances, particularly relating to special education since it's such a specific issue?
Mr. DeVries.
So each charter school is its own district. So if you're saying the district, as far as does the authorizer work with that specific charter school, yes. Does the authorizer work with the larger school districts that the school may be located in? No.
Representative Sandell?
Mr. Chair, thank you. I understand that individual charter schools are their individual districts, but they do deal with students in the traditional public school system. How often do the representatives, the administrators from the charter schools meet officially or informally with the administration of the local or traditional school system?
Mr. DeVries.
It would be up to individual schools. I mean, there's no formal that they have to meet with the district. There's no formal procedure. So as far as stating the exact amount, some may meet more frequently. I know that three school districts authorize schools in our state. Northfield, Chisago Lakes, and Winona. So they probably meet with those schools more frequently, but the others probably not as much.
Representative Sandell?
Mr. Chair, thank you. I am a supporter of the idea of charter schools. Don't get me wrong about that. I do support the idea, but I do know that originally the issues presented by the Federation of Teachers in New York City with Albert Shanker was that the charter schools become kind of an experiment or kind of a laboratory for the traditional systems, and the relationship between the two should have been a cooperative relationship, one which discussed innovations in one school or another to make sure that we're providing the best services possible for our children. But my concern is that the charter schools are not assuming that responsibility, and the traditional school system, I guess, as well, should initiate these conversations. And I think this issue in both Duluth and Rochester is kind of festers, and it's now a dollar and cents issue rather than simply a curriculum issue. And I just think it really behooves us and you as well to make these conversations a little bit more regular and to try to avoid these real discrepancies that are now in front of the rest of us.
Thank you, Representative Sandell. Other questions from members? Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you know what the total cost would be if this were transacted, this 1207, other than what is provided for Rochester or Duluth?
Ms. Adrians, do we have a fiscal note? Do we have an assessment of the cost?
Mr. Chair and members, we do not have a fiscal note in the bill. There is an appropriation on page 4 of $3.2 million in fiscal year 2020.
And then I have a note here that an additional $1,075,000 each year going forward. Mr. Strom?
Mr. Chair, members, yes, the base adjustment would start essentially go back to 2016 for the district and push up their base. So it would be slightly more than that because that base, the fiscal 16 base, as the superintendent was saying, was the essentially is brought forward each year. And because that base was too low in that year for them is where the trouble comes from. So that amount would be compounding as it goes forward at the growth rate, at the 4.6% growth rate, and then adjusted for the enrollment changes in the Duluth district.
All right. Thank you. Representative Erickson, any other questions?
No, that was good clarification. And Mr. Strom, that's for Duluth, correct?
Mr. Strom?
The million, 96, et cetera.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, yes.
Thank you.
Other questions from members? Seeing none. Representative Olson, any closing comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I appreciate the consideration of the bill.
All right. With that, Representative Richardson renews her motion that House File 1207, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in a future division report. Thank you. Members, we are going to jump to Representative Edelson's House File, where'd it go? 814. And members, this bill, this is an informational hearing. It is currently in the possession of the Health and Human Services Committee. We are only going to focus on, let me see if I get this right the first time, sections related to, well,
subdivision
section 2?
Five.
Excuse me?
Subdivision 5.
Subdivision 5.
Correct.
Also known as lines 4.10 to 4.22. And there is an amendment. Given that this is an informational hearing and we are not in possession of the bill, we are unable to move the amendment. But Representative Edelson, do you want to speak to the amendment? And this would be the 814A3 amendment, also in your packets, members.
Representative Edelson. Thank you, Chair. It's just clarifying language to make it a little bit more clear on what we're trying to do here, and we'll be able to speak to it throughout our testimony today.
Thank you.
Chair, is it okay if I start?
Please.
Okay, very well. So this is a part of 814, House File 814 is the School Linked Mental Health Grants, which, as the Chair had mentioned, is in Health and Human Service finance laid over for possible inclusion. This specific, and those dollars will be coming out of the general fund. Now, with this one specifically, coming to Ed Finance, because what we want to do is provide targeted funding for school districts with level 4 special education setting programs. This funding can be used to develop innovative therapeutic teaching models like what the intermediates are doing currently. Students are receiving mental health services in the schools now in intermediates and co-ops. Over the past several legislative sessions, intermediates have received funding from the legislature to begin addressing the mental health needs of their special education setting for students. But that funding was one time, and it will expire this year. While one-time funding is great and greatly appreciated, at this point, we need to have sustained program funding to ensure that students are getting mental health services in their schools, which I think collectively we can probably all understand that those kids that are getting the services are going to be more successful in their environmental settings with education. So I'm going to go ahead and move directly to my testifiers. Connie Hayes, you are up first.
Superintendent Hayes, welcome back to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Connie Hayes. I'm superintendent at Northeast Metro 916 Intermediate District. The intermediate school district serves the highest need federal setting level 4 students from 45 member districts in the metro and surrounding area. These students experience significant challenges collectively, a disability, a mental illness, trauma, complex psychopharmacology profiles, and additionally, the biggest reason they are referred to our programs is their significant aggression towards self and others. The intermediate districts are very thankful for the grants that the legislature has provided. In particular, today I'll talk about the innovative mental health grants from DHS to support our pilot efforts to infuse a higher level of mental health services into the education programs of our highest need students. You do have a one-page handout that summarizes our efforts of the intermediate districts. Each of us have been using these grant dollars to build partnerships with providers who are now working in our schools rather than having students being taken out of school to a clinic or a day treatment program. That push-in model allows us to maximize the partnership and planning between education staff and clinical staff along with the families of the children. Each of the intermediates began implementing our new approaches at the beginning of the 18-19 school year, and early results are promising. Today I will focus on efforts at Intermediate 916, where we serve students from our 14-member districts in the Northeast Metro. Our clinical partnership provider is Canvas Health. We are implementing three innovative school-based programs with them in our 916 programs. The first one I will talk about is our education mental health classrooms. We have two classrooms at Carner Blue Education Center for 13 students where the clinical staff from Canvas work in the classroom alongside the teacher and the educational assistants. This model allows the mental health clinician to see firsthand how the student's mental health complexities impact both the behavior and academic challenges. The clinical staff work with the educational staff to support the student during episodes to improve outcomes, and together they build strategies to be used in the classroom. Although they are partnering in the classroom, the educational staff can focus more on educational outcomes, and the clinical staff can provide student support on the mental health needs. Privacy is maintained for the students and the families, and only data that parents approve is shared with the educational staff to promote the best development of services is shared with the educational staff. I want to share with you one story about a student that I hope, even at this very early stage of implementing this new approach, suggests that this is a very good investment. I'll call her Sarah. Sarah has been with us since we opened Carner Blue Education Center in the fall of 2014. She has struggled significantly with her mental health and has not been able to make sufficient progress. She was having frequent, very big emotional outbursts as a result of her anxiety disorder. When she viewed her schoolwork as unacceptable or felt that she was not performing as well as other students, she would have intense outbursts that included self-harm. These episodes were very disruptive and kept her out of the classroom for many hours of the day and required multiple interventions from the care team, the social worker, the school psychologist, the administration, and her mother. This fall, she was moved into one of the educational mental health classrooms. This new classroom model has given her three additional hours of embedded mental health services during her school day. The team has been able to address the underlying trauma that, having been unmet, was impeding her progress. Now, she is able to engage consistently without the school day. She has made significant progress toward her goals, and her IEP team is celebrating her progress. The team is planning the transition process back to her home district next fall. This is the kind of success story we hope to continue to build upon with ongoing funding. The second way we are using our innovative mental health dollars is starting a very similar program to the one that I just mentioned, only with an early childhood focus. We just started our first early childhood level 4 classroom this month. Our member districts have been asking us for several years to expand our programming for early childhood, and now that we have the resources to build the program that can include a significant focus on mental health, we feel we can provide the necessary support for students and families. Our hopes are that this earlier intervention approach will lessen the need for these students who clearly show a very high level of need at an early age to be referred to our programs. We are planning to expand this effort in at least two additional classrooms spread around our member districts to provide closer access for such young children. However, one of the challenges we have had in getting these programs up and going this year has been the workforce challenges. Canvas Health has not been able to hire the two additional clinicians to start the elementary classrooms at Pancalo Education Center with another 14 students. And we have been delayed in starting our early childhood classroom because of the same issue. We now anticipate at 916 that we will have unspent funds at the end of the grant period, and we are hoping to get approval from the legislature this year for the grant dollars to be extended due to these delays. The third way 916 is utilizing these grant dollars is a push-in chemical treatment program for students in our programs. These middle and secondary students participate in their educational program for a half a day, and the other half of the day they are in chemical treatment at school with the Canvas Health specialist. Our students with chemical issues create very unique challenges in chemical treatment because of the enormous complexity of their needs, their mental health, their disability, and their educational delays. However, treating the chemical issues will help them respond better to the interventions in those areas. Through the second quarter of this year, the chemical health staff has consulted with nearly 50 students, 14 students participated in chemical support group, and 4 students received outpatient therapy, either individual or group. None of these students would have had any of the support without these resources. We are very excited at 916 to have these resources to support some of the most challenging students and some of the most complex profiles that you can imagine. Along with the grant dollars for our staff development needs, the intermediates are requesting that we change the grant dollars for the intermediates to ongoing funding. My colleague, Superintendent Sandy Lewandowski, and I have been lobbying for support for the needs of our students and our staff in our programs for over 14 years now. We have shared with policymakers over the years that better outcomes for our students are intricately woven into our capacity to provide a safer environment for our students and staff. I won't take time today to detail examples of our safety challenges, but I can tell you that our staff face serious injuries every single day. I'm often surprised that they come back to work every day, but doing so is just one indication of their dedication to these students and their belief that the right kind of resources and support can and do make a big difference in the lives of these students. Both Superintendent Lewandowski and I are fearful of moving backwards in our capacity to serve our students and our ability to keep investing in practices that reduce injury to staff if these vital resources disappear. Thank you very much for your interest in our bill, and thank you very much over the years for the support of our work.
Thank you, Superintendent Hayes. Next on my list is Bailey Rettman from someplace that I'm not quite sure of.
Thank you, Chairman and Board members.
Welcome just the same.
My name is Bailey Rettman. I'm from Southwest West Central Service Cooperative. We were added into this grant along with the intermediates to provide these mental health services with these grant dollars to our students. We are a service cooperative that serves 18 counties in southwestern Minnesota. You guys were able to come out and visit Windham earlier this year as a committee, which is one of our sites for our Setting 4 programs, which we very much appreciated you guys having come out and kind of see where we're located. We right now serve 5 different communities across our region. Our region is about 12,500 square miles, so we're a very large geographical region, which makes it very difficult to get mental health support out to all of our students in need. We service kids that are mainly behavioral, and our previous experience with our students prior to this grant dollars coming out was we focused a lot on just the behavioral needs of our students. We weren't focusing on the whole child. Now with these grant dollars, working with Greater Minnesota, who's our partner, we're able to focus on the child as a whole. It's not just behavior, it's behavioral health services, which includes that mental health aspect. With these dollars, we've been able to have mental health therapists in our programs up to 2 days a week where we're able to find the staff. Along with the intermediates, one of our biggest challenges is finding the workforce to be able to provide these services has become a challenge. We have, since instituting this, getting these people out there, it not only supports our students within our schools and our programs, it provides the families with a resource through Greater Minnesota that they're able to then hopefully tap into outside of the school day as well. Greater Minnesota has seen increase in students receiving those services all day, all year, not just within our school, which has been a huge benefit, where in the past our families haven't known how to access those skills, and this has given us that avenue. Since we put this grant dollars in place, one thing that we're very proud to say is working on the student as a whole, this year alone, we have transitioned 5 times the number of students successfully back to their home districts than we had in the 5 years previous combined. That means we're able to look at these students, really address their needs, get them the supports, get them the help to be able to go back to their public districts to be successful. That has been a big help to our district with their financials, because coming to a Setting 4 is not a cheap thing for districts to do. So this grant has allowed us to decrease those costs for our member districts. prior to this year, we had seen over the last 7 years a 16% growth annually on average into our Setting 4 programs. That led to a lot of additional problems for our districts with funding and for us with staffing. This mental health grant is hopefully going to allow us to decrease that 16% growth by getting kids back to their public school districts in a faster manner so that we're not seeing that continued growth, which leads to many more problems along with it. Prior to this grant, we worked a lot with just behavior analysts, special education teachers. We didn't have those expertise in the mental health field. Now we have those people on our team to help coordinate the facility of the whole child. And that's really what I want to emphasize to this committee is the whole child that we're focusing on. If we're going to help treat these children and get them the successful schooling, education, and programming they need, we need to provide it for all aspects of their life. I want to thank you guys for the opportunity to come down here and testify in front of you. We are very much in support of making these dollars an ongoing thing so we can continue to provide these supports for students not only in intermediate districts, but also in rural Minnesota as well. Thank you guys all for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Rettman. This is a public hearing. Is there anyone who wishes to come forward to testify either for or against the provisions of House File 814? Yeah, sure enough. That we're hearing. Seeing none, we'll go to members' questions. Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the testifiers and Representative Edelson, this program extremely excites me. Before I was in the legislature, you know that I worked in an emergency room. One of the saddest days was going to work, seeing a kid that was pulled out of school, and coming back 6 days later, and that kid's still in our emergency room. That's not working, and that's what we're doing today. I'm excited to see where this is going, and this is the answer. We need to leave these kids in school. We need to figure out innovative ways of treating them in school and working towards this. A question, have you worked with telemedicine at all on this?
Superintendent.
Mr. Chairman, member, we have not used telemedicine at this point.
Representative Hewitt.
All right. And Mr. Chair and to the testifiers, real quick comment that I've been researching this quite a bit lately, and just to look at it, and one of the things I found is our health systems, I hope they're in the room and hear this very clear, they're all over our schools for our athletes and our trainers and stuff like that, but when it comes to mental health, they seem to walk the other way. So I look forward to calling them to the table and working with us on this problem, because I think you guys do have the answers.
Thank you. Any other member questions? Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to Mr. Rettman and to Ms. Hayes, thank you very much for your work and for your efforts to help our children. My concern is there follow-up, after, for example, in your program, Mr. Rettman, after the child returns to the district from which he or she came, is there follow-up? Because in any kind of therapy, there has to be follow-up, because you have to ensure that what has been done for the child continues to work for that child. And so I'm just, wondering to what extent is there follow-up for both your programs?
Mr. Rettman.
Thank you, Chairman and committee members. One of the things that we've implemented this year with our increased transitions, it's a wonderful question. We've implemented an entire procedure when we transition kids back to be able to allow the districts to be trained by some of our staff along with get what is and is not working for those students. And I would say that's one of the big reasons we've seen that increase along with this grant is prior to doing that, we were sending kids back and they weren't being successful and they were coming directly back to us. That's also where this grant has helped with getting the families the resources, getting them in touch with Greater Minnesota for us as the example, that they're able to then help provide that service once they're back at the district, also just back at home as well. So it's really helped with that. Thank you.
Representative Erickson, Superintendent, that's right.
Chairman. At 916 for about 5 years now, we've been deploying some services out to our member districts for the purpose of assisting a student to transition back, but also to hopefully prevent some referrals coming our way. This last 2 years, we've been providing some summer training for our member districts to help build some of the skill set of their special education teams. Our staff have had to kind of learn it on the fly and have learned some best practices. I often tell people there's no curriculum, there's no manual to take off the shelf that tells you how to best serve these very challenging students. So we're very interested in sharing our expertise with our member districts and others who are interested in learning about it. We're just starting to see some positive impact on that. So part of the answer to your question is sort of a long-term commitment to that. But specifically, when a student is ready to transition back, oftentimes that means they'll just go a partial day in their member district and a partial day in our program, and that as their success proves itself, then they eventually become fully transitioned back into the member district.
Representative Erickson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and that's really good to hear. Do you also follow up with the families so that we know that that when the child goes home, that also these strategies that have been instilled in the child continue to work so that the family is getting well is ready? To either of you, is that occurring?
Superintendent?
Representative Erickson, Mr. Chair, working with the families has proven a little bit more challenging on the terms of having the provider get enough money out of the grant program to be reimbursed for their costs. We started our innovation plan working with a provider called Family Innovations, and our hope was that the provider would be providing services to the family while the student is also in school, and then that would follow the student back to the home district. But we haven't figured out how to have the provider be able to make a go of it. We're still talking about it, but it is one challenging part that we're still trying to manage.
Mr. Rettman?
Representative Erickson, Chairman, Board members. One of the challenges we see along with the intermediates is we do a similar transition phase out with students. It's a slow process. Throughout that entire process, we're continually holding meetings with the family, bringing the mental health people and all the experts in to help coach the family, give the family the things. I would say our biggest challenge with that has been getting the families to the table. That kind of presents a challenge in itself right now that we're continually trying to work on. One of our aspects that makes it a problem is our geographical region, where some of the students are traveling up to 50 miles one way just to come to our programs. So to get the families there, we've really tried to get creative with technology, you know, doing those sorts of things. But we try to keep the family involved throughout the entire process. It's getting to the table that has been the additional challenge.
Representative Kunesh-Podein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, testifiers, and for your dedication to addressing the needs of our students. And as you were just saying in these last few minutes, the struggle to have the services, provide the services, and the logistics of getting students and families to the center to work with them. Have you thought about moving your services into some of the school buildings, kind of thinking about that full-service school method and idea about that way if a student is having a really rough day, they would have the services right there on site? And when you're talking about a half day, providing a half day with you and then a half day back in the classroom, has there ever been discussion about moving those, like, into the schools or very near to the schools so that those kind of logistical issues aren't too much of a problem?
Superintendent?
Mr. Chair, that's actually been a request some of our member districts have asked us to do, is to kind of open up shop in their programs. Right now, we haven't got the capacity to do that. We still have probably a half dozen unfilled teacher positions, which has kept us from allowing us to enroll all of the students that they want to. So it's something that we look to the future to hopefully accomplish as we do this new service with our members. The whole idea is that we're trying to prevent so many of these kids being referred to these level four programs and have them their services met in the least restrictive environment. So we look to the future for that. Thank you for the question.
Yes, Representative Sanstead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know if this will be for you or for maybe one of our analysts, but is there anything that you can think of that would preclude private practice coming into a public school setting if they're already working with the student instead of pulling them out for services, seeing them in there? Is there anything that you can think would be restricting that?
That's actually what our chair, Representative Sands, did. That's what the school linked mental health grants do, is they co-locate therapists in a school. Now, they would still be pulled out for therapy because you can't do therapy in terms of privacy in a classroom, but that's what the school linked mental health grants do.
I understand that.
Okay.
Outside of a grant, I mean, is there anything that would preclude a school?
No. Okay. No, there's not.
Okay. Thank you.
And we will we'll be going next, actually, I think, to Representative Juergens' bill on school-linked mental health. Or not. But we'll be discussing that further today. Representative Edelson, any closing comments?
I just want to speak to the importance of the intermediates and the co-ops. I don't know if you've all been to an intermediate school district. I've had the pleasure of visiting District 287, Sandy Langdowski School. And these are very complex kids. And so I just want to thank you guys for your service. And thank you all for giving us this informational hearing today.
Thank you, Representative Edelson. Superintendent Hayes, Mr. Rettman, please accept our thanks for coming in today.
Thank you.
We will move next to House File 1559. Chair Joachim. Chair Joachim, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members.
Do you have a motion for House File 1559?
Yes, I'd like to move that House File 1559 be laid over for possible inclusion.
So, very good. just fine. With that, Representative Joachim, why don't you proceed? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. As an education support professional, this bill is near and dear to my heart. House File 1559 requires that education support professionals, ESPs, also known as paraprofessionals, are given 16 hours of paid professional development or training per year. The bill has an appropriation to pay for this that will be worked out once we have a fiscal note, which we do now have in your packet, and that'll be up to our chair. There's also a requirement that ESPs who work with individual students with disabilities must be given paid time to review a student's IEP and time to collaborate with the student's teacher regarding the plan, which can happen during some of the downtime during the school day. Many of these requirements are already happening in our schools. This bill would just allow us to not only make sure that they're happening, but also to make sure that the schools have the funding to do so. During this session, our committee has heard from teachers, parents, administrators, and school boards how important trained and qualified support staff are in meeting our students' needs and meeting their students where they're at. We have heard about the importance of trauma training for students with high ACEs scores, of crisis intervention training and restorative practices for our children in crisis, and the increasing need for mental health training for all of our school staff. A lot of that was just talked about in the previous bill we just heard. As an ESAP in a Level 3 EBD and LD program at Aquila Elementary in St. Louis Park, I've seen how effective professional training can be. In particular, the trauma training I received regarding students with high ACEs scores. It enabled me to connect with a particular student I was working with in a way to meet his needs. But that four-hour training was all that was available. Due to the school's budget, I was not able to attend a refresher for my CPI training, which is a non-crisis prevention intervention training, and I found that I had found so valuable when I worked at Hopkins School District. And since I started 2 weeks into the school year at Aquila, the 5+ hours of online modules dealing with health and safety had to be viewed on my own time. I was happy to do that, but if I would have been hired before the school year began, I would have had the ability to do the training with my ESP colleagues on campus where we could have collaborated. St. Louis Park is not alone in trying to find money for training. Many districts are forced to pick and choose what they can afford versus training their ESPs as a fully functional team that could do so much more to serve our students. While this is my story, I know that it's not a unique one. I have some fellow ESPs here to testify, and there is a letter of support in your packet from PACER as well. So now I'd like to turn the rest of my testimony over to Michelle Denard, who is a special education ESP from Osseo Secondary Transition Center at Osseo Public Schools, And then also Sierra Washington, who is a Title I math ESP from Northview Middle School at Osseo Public Schools.
Thank you very much, Representative Youakim. Ms. Denard, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Chair and committee members. My name is Michelle Denard, and I am a special education paraprofessional in the Osseo School District. I have worked in the Osseo area schools for 14 years. I love my job, and I want to help all students. I work with students with special needs in the transition program ages 18 to 21. My students have behavior and emotional disorders and learning difficulties like fetal alcohol syndrome, bipolar disorders, and other mental health and physical diagnoses, etc. These are very complicated diagnoses, and proper training is essential to learn how to best support all students. It's important that all students' needs are met no matter how complicated their situation. For example, in our program, we might get a new student who uses the wheelchair as a special education paraprofessional. We are the staff required to transfer the student out of the wheelchair in order for the student to use the restroom. It is unsafe and inappropriate for us to learn how to meet the student needs 30 minutes prior to helping the student. We not only need to learn how to meet the student's physical needs, but we need to know what the student's IEP requires for support and goals. Without time set aside for this important learning, we do not have a chance to do this. We might also get a student whose behavior escalates suddenly. We need to know the triggers that cause the student to escalate and what to do to help the student calm down or de-escalate. Teaming up with teachers and case managers to learn techniques would help us greatly. Most importantly, it will help the student to be successful. Right now, we are not given this essential time to collaborate with the teachers at all. On behalf of all Minnesota ESPs, I ask you to please support this bill so we can have proper tools we need to help all students. Thank you, Representative Youakim, for authoring this bill, and thank you, Chair and committee members, for the opportunity to speak with you today.
Thank you, Ms. Denard. Ms. Washington, please introduce yourself to the tape. Welcome to the committee and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Chair and committee members. My name is Sierra Washington. I am a Title I math education support professional at Northview Middle School in the Osseo Area School District 279. I have worked as an ESP in the Osseo Area School District as a Title I ESP and a hall monitor for the last few years. I went into education because I wanted to make a difference in students' lives. It is essential for ESPs to have the necessary training prior to beginning to work with students. However, oftentimes we are working with students right away with our only training being on the job. While this, of course, can be stressful for us as an ESP, more importantly, it impacts the students. Our positions require us to be versatile to meet students' needs. As a hall monitor, it would have been helpful to receive training such as conflict resolution, trauma-informed instructions, etc. Having this training would better prepare us to meet students where they are at. As a classroom ESP, it would have been helpful to receive training specific to the individual student's needs, such as behavior management and collaborative time with teachers, etc. Again, not only will this help us be the best prepared to help our students, it would also give us the confidence we need to do the best job that we can. I ask you to please support this bill for all of the reasons I stated to help my colleagues and I be the best trained that we can be, all for the purpose of helping our students succeed. Thank you, Representative Youakim, for authoring this bill, and thank you, committee members, for the opportunity to speak to you today.
Thank you, Ms. Washington. Is there anyone else in the this is a public hearing. Is there anyone else in the audience who wishes to testify either for or against House File 1559? Seeing none, Representative Sandstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to say thank you to both of the paras or the ESPs for the great work that you are doing. A shout out to Rep. Joachim for bringing this bill forward. Members, this is so critically important. When we think about the contact points a student goes through in a day, you are critical as part of their care team within a school. These are some of our neediest students. And if you translated this concept into a healthcare plan, you would never expect your doctor to come in unprepared, unfamiliar with your own case history, and be ready to treat you effectively. They are part of a team. As a profession, you need that time for professional development, and it is in the student's best interest for you to have some aspect of orientation in their care and with their classroom teachers. So thank you for that, and thank you, Rep. Joachim.
Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and maybe to the testifiers. Has your district been able to maybe set aside any staff development money for some of this work?
Ms. Denard or Ms. Washington?
We are given staff development hours for different things, but they're all students with special different needs, and it depends on what building you're in and what student comes in at that time. And I was just giving you an example of a new student that came into our building, and I've been in that building for 6 years. And so to meet the student needs, I needed to be trained to properly transfer the student from the wheelchair until the in the restroom to use the bathroom. And you know, when they're fragile, you want to make sure you are handling them the correct way. And if you're not being taught to do that 30 minutes prior, it's not fair to that student, because you can hurt that student, you know. So yes, we are given hours, but not when it comes to specific needs when a student is entering your building.
You know. Ms. Washington, do you have a response to Representative Detmer's question?
Thank you for the question. However, I'm not prepared to answer that, but I will get back to you.
No worries. Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the question, Representative Detmer. And I think Ms. Denard points out a good case of how every school is so different. You have the individual needs you need to meet for the students and training for just that particular child, but we also have, this bill kind of addresses the overall training that we also need to do to help with all children in the school, whether it be the crisis prevention intervention training, trauma training. We have to view modules on bloodborne pathogens and all these different things that we have to do that's kind of at 16 hours of the full training. The time to spend with the IEP and collaborating with the teacher is crucially important with what Ms. Denard said, to figure out what that individual child needs to. And it really is hard when you're thrown into a situation, because a lot of moving parts at schools, things move really fast, and you'll get a new student and you'll have absolutely no clue what their triggers are, what their needs are, you know, if they have a feeding tube, or if they have a bag you have to worry about, how you deal with if they're nonverbal. Just there's a lot of things that these kiddos need that we want to make sure that we can meet them, and to do that, we need training.
Representative Detmer. Oh,
thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Hewitt.
Mr. Chair, and to the testifiers, a real quick question. How much health care are you providing, like possibly passing meds or doing things that is specific to the person as a health care need? Do you have a lot of that as part of your job?
We do not
Ms. Denard?
Pass meds. We do not pass meds.
Okay.
It's strictly done by the school nurse.
All right. And what about other... I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. What about other medical needs? Like you said, you have to do transfers. You may have to do other... Is there anything else that's involved in that that...
Ms. Denard?
Can you say more? I mean, when you say, is there other needs?
Representative Hewitt.
Mr. Chair, so it sounds like you have to do transfers from wheelchair to wherever. Do you have to help them with the bathroom situation? Do you have to sometimes do other personal care item
things? Have to sometimes.
Ms. Denard.
When they have food, if they need help with that, you have to assist with that. When they need to go from the wheelchair to go walking, you have to help with that. whatever their needs are, you have to meet their needs. Is when they have, like, if they have an accident, you have to change all those, their, you know, clothing, and you have to know how to do it properly if they have fragile bones.
Representative Hewitt.
Mr. Chair, and prior to this training, have you had any nursing attendant training or anything like that?
Ms. Denard?
Outside of doing it for my mom, no, sir.
Representative Hewitt.
And Mr. Chair, so the state already requires anybody that is in contact with a patient in the manner that they're describing to go to a nursing assistant school or a professional school. And so the 16 hours here is very reasonable to what these individuals are going to have to are doing now, and what I'm understanding. And the reason for the med question is I did get that question already this year from another group that is in your situation, and they said they are passing meds, which concerns all of us around this table, if that's the truth. So thank you for what you're doing, and I hope this prevails, because being in healthcare myself, I know the essentials of working as a team, making sure you know what you're getting involved with, and really meeting your client to where they're at, and making sure you can do that. So thank you for what you're doing, and I totally support this bill. Chair,
thank you, Representative Hewitt. Representative Youakim, any closing questions or comments?
Well, I just want to thank Representative Hewitt for the question. There is some concerns, too. And when I mentioned some of the things I did, it was mostly because of the transport issue. If you have a student that's in a wheelchair, usually if there's a feeding tube or things like that, the nurse is coming down to do it. And as a para, I've always felt supported that if I don't feel comfortable doing something, I can always go to the lead teacher or the nurse. Mm-hmm. So that's a good thing. But you're right. The extra training needed, we did have to take, when I was working at early childhood SPED and we had vulnerable kids and kids that were in PCA programs, we did have to take a PCA module online, but I found it kind of, and it was the same PCA module everybody that in the state has to take as a PCA, but it mainly talked about what the rights and responsibilities of which different party was and had very, 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 very little medical knowledge that you'd have to impart. So that worries me too. So maybe we could deal with that later. But for the educational setting, I've always felt pretty supportive having the school nurse there. So
all right. Thank you, Chair.
And then I have some quick closing comments
too, if it's okay. I thought those were.
But I just wanted to thank my fellow ESPs for coming here today. This is the second time we've got a chance to talk together and to hear their stories. They play a very important role, all the ESPs do, in our students' educational needs and meeting them where they're at and where they should be in school. ESPs are the folks in our schools that transport our children from their homes to schools and back. They provide most of the direct services to students with disabilities. They prepare the cafeteria meals that nourish our kids. They're the reasons hallways are mopped, trash bins are emptied, schedules are printed, supplies are ordered, recesses kept safe, and buildings are repaired. We trust ESPs with very important caretaking skills. They need professional development to be successful in their careers, and we owe them at least the chance to receive that training. You've heard testimony about how important this training is. I do want to note that some folks have come forward with a few concerns about some of the language, and I'll be meeting with them later, and that's why they didn't come down today, so we'll be meeting to look at that. And I sit before you with the personal experience of how valuable this training can be, and I ask for your support of this bill.
Thank you very much. With that, Representative Youakim renews her motion that House File 1559 be laid over for possible inclusion in a future division report. Thank you, Representative Youakim. Thank you, Ms. Denard and Ms. Washington. Representative Juergens. Representative Erickson, would you like to move House File 732 to be laid over for possible? Oh, no, you get to do it.
I can do that.
Yeah. Let's let Representative Juergens do it. I would hope so, too. My apologies, sir.
Actually, Mr. Chair, for clarification, is that the intent to be included, or would this go to Ways and Means on its way to HHS with the amendment that we're going to move?
You are in top form today, Representative Durgan. So, no, it would be to refer to Ways and Means with a recommendation it be referred to the Health and Human Services Finance Division.
Okay, that is my motion then.
Thank you very much. And then I see a 0210 amendment in the packet.
If you'd like
to speak to that.
I would like to move the amendment, please. So this bill is schooling mental health, and I know we're running a little late over time here, so we'll be very brief. I have five testifiers. This bill...
Representative Juergens, let's adopt your amendment first.
Thank you.
All right. So Representative Juergens moves to the 0210 amendment. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you.
Representative Juergens, your bill is amended, sir.
So Schooling Mental Health is a grant program where school districts can apply for grants to help provide mental health services to their students. This was included in the omnibus bill last year. Representative Loon was the author. The language initially prior to this amendment was very similar. It's for $10 million a year plus some administrative fees for this year and next year. And with that, I'd like to move to my testifiers. Sue Adgerholden from NAMI is the first testifier, and Mark Sander from NAMI would be next.
Ms. Adgerholden, welcome back to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, Sue Adgerholden, Executive Director of NAMI Minnesota. So we've had schooling to mental health since actually 2007. The dollars went out the door in 2008, so we now have had basically 10 years of experience with this program. The funding goes to a community mental health provider who then co-locates in the school, which actually addresses all the barriers that families face in getting their children the care that they need. You've heard about the intermediate districts, and you know, I think it's important to know that we are providing these services in the schools so that, again, children can access that care. One of the things that we know is that this has actually reduced the disparities, especially among students of color, because they are actually having greater access to mental health treatment than before, so which is also a really good thing that we're moving in that direction. We also know that we have greater treatment completion rates because, again, we've eliminated barriers. We've decreased suspensions, and we've increased engagement. And I think the biggest thing is that students actually get better, which is also really important. One of the things that NAMI really wanted to do this year is to look at, you know, kind of in the interim, is to really pull everyone together to say, so where are we with this program, right? It's 10 years of experience. One thing we want to be careful about, which kind of includes the intermediate districts as well, is that if we keep kind of making this a really competitive grant program, we're essentially rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic, right? So when we get new money, we want to be able to expand. But if we've got a provider who's got that money, they're doing a good job with it, we want them to keep it. Because otherwise, they have to rearrange. Frankly, it can ruin the relationships they have with the schools. Staffing can be an issue. So unfortunately, in our mental health system, we have to rely on grants. But rearranging them every couple of years isn't really helpful in terms of building stability within our program. The other thing that we want to look at, which I think is really important, is are we collecting the right data? Are there other things that we should be looking at now that we've had this 10 years of experience? And the other thing, which is where I think the Education Committee really comes in, is so how does this all work together? So what should the kind of FTE be in a school per number of students, right? If it's too low, we're not able to really build kind of the capacity of the whole school. What happens when you add a certain number of school support personnel per student on top of it? Do we double the outcomes, the good outcomes? What happens when we do PBIS or other multi-systemic programs within the school? How does that kind of add in terms of improving the outcomes? And we don't know that right now. And then we think it would be really good going into the future to be able to look at all of that because, you know, we're putting all these resources in the school. What happens when we do it in a certain way? Does that really improve the outcomes for children? And I think we need to look at that as well. The other thing I just want to mention is telemedicine was brought up on the other bill. one of the important parts of the school-linked mental health program is it's not just to treat children. It's actually to build the capacity of the entire school so that when you have a student who has, for example, serious anxiety, the mental health professional can work with the teacher to know how to support the student in the classroom. That then means that the next student that that teacher gets who has serious anxiety, they actually know how to support that student. So it's really important to know it's not just about treating kids, it's also about working with the whole school. The other thing that was mentioned as well is the workforce shortages. And I just want this committee to know that we have actually a bill to increase and address the workforce shortages in Minnesota, including things like loan forgiveness programs. The other thing is that we have very low rates under Medicaid. Right now, under managed care, most of our mental health professionals are getting paid less than fee-for-service Medicaid, which then makes it really hard, frankly, to attract and keep people. And thirdly, I want to say, you know, we talked about, you know, might be difficult for parents to get to the school. Right now, under private insurance, very few, if any, will pay for in-home services on mental health care, which is why the mental health parity bill, which is going well on the House side, is so important as well. So, you know, kind of when we think about how are we going to address students' mental health, there's a lot of different moving parts that we need to look at as well. So thank you so much. We clearly support this bill. You know, would like to see, you know, additional language in the future, but this is absolutely going in the right direction, and it's a great program.
Thank you very much, Ms. Abderholden. Mr. Sander. Is it Dr. Sander?
It is Dr. Sander.
It is Dr. Sander. Please introduce yourself to the committee and proceed with your testimony.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, guests, I'm honored to be here today. I'm Dr. Mark Sander. I'm with Hennepin County, but I've had the good fortune to have a joint position between Hennepin County and the Minneapolis Public Schools for the last 14 years. And I'm here to really advocate for the increased funding for school-based or school-linked mental health. I've been involved in school-linked mental health in the Minneapolis Public Schools since 2005. We started with five schools back in 2005, and this year we are now in 50 schools in Minneapolis, in over 170 schools across Hennepin County. And a large part of that, you know, exponential expansion is due to the school-linked mental health grant program, so thank you very much. I also want you to know that on the national stage, Minnesota is recognized as a national leader, both for the innovative programming that we have. The Hennepin County School Mental Health Initiative received an award of an exemplar performance from the National Center on School Mental Health. And at the National Center, they often talk about the legislation and the grant funding that's available here in Minnesota that is not often found in other states. So thank you very much. One of the key reasons why we are a state to be looked at is how we've built the program, which is bringing community-based professionals into the schools to collaborate with the school-employed professionals that are already there. And so there is a term that we're talking about now nationally, which is comprehensive school mental health systems. And it's really about how do we provide mental health supports from prevention all the way through treatment within schools. And it's really through having very clear roles and responsibilities and really having adequate student support services in the building, school psychologists, school counselors, school nurses, school social workers, as well as bringing in community-based therapists to also provide that treatment level of service. So we've got to have everybody in the building, and we need to have them working together collaboratively and having time to do that. And these grant funds really help create the time for them to meet and for, as Sue was talking about, for the therapists to help build the capacity of the school staff to support students. So what happens when we do this well? When we do this well, we have found that over 50% of the students that the therapists are seeing, this is their very first time ever receiving mental health services. Over half of the students. Of those getting services for the first time, we found in some of the state data that 42% were found to be seriously emotionally disturbed. What does that mean? It means they're at risk for out-of-home placement in the next school year. Right? What do I take away from this? There's a whole lot of families out there that can't access care, even though they've got really significant needs. So when we do this well, we've also found that both parents and teachers report improvement in mental health functioning for the students. Schools report, and I've done research on decreases in attendance issues for students that have had attendance problems. increases in attendance for students with attendance problems, decreases in suspensions for students with suspension problems. And then the Hennepin County Children's Health Collaborative commissioned a study back in 2016 by Wilder Research. And it was a qualitative study talking to schools and parents. And what parents said, I think, was particularly important. Because of the school and the student support staff and the families working together and the therapists working together, they felt more connected to the schools. And then the parents went on to report over 75% of them saying that their students felt more connected to schools, were more active in schools, and felt a greater sense of belonging. Okay, so all of this really moves towards the importance of having these services and showing that when students are more connected, we know that their academic improvement goes up. In conclusion, I just want to say that I'm strongly in favor of increasing these services. There are many schools and that need them. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Dr. Sanders. Representative Jurgens.
Mr. Chair, next up I have Keith Jacoba, Superintendent of Schools, South Washington County, District 833, and Joe Park, a mental health specialist at South Washington County Schools.
Very good. Thank you very much. Representative Jacobus, welcome.
Thank you.
Superintendent, what did I just call you? I shouldn't do that.
That's Superintendent. Television. Thank you very much.
Please introduce yourself for the tape and proceed.
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Keith Jacobus. I'm the superintendent for the South Washington County School District. We're a east suburban school district that's serving about 18,500 children. I'm very pleased, and thank you for the opportunity to talk about this grant. Mental health is one of the main issues that come forward to me as a superintendent from both our teachers and our administrators. And year after year, the complexity of the needs of our kids and the severity of the needs impact the classroom teachers and our ability to service their needs. As you've heard from my colleague in Rochester, we struggle with this issue for two reasons. One is financial. You know the issues with keeping pace with inflation. Our fund balance is now under 2%. We have cut millions of dollars from our budget since I've been the superintendent. We've gone to our voters six times in the last 7 years for support, and they have been generously supportive of us, but yet we are still reducing when we have issues such as mental health to be able to support kids. We are a member of 916, and you heard from Superintendent Hayes, they do a phenomenal job, but they do not have the bandwidth to support the number of kids that we request help with. And so we are dealing with the issue within the school district, and we'd like to. We want to have our children here. But the other issue is the complexity of their needs. We need professionals in the medical field to help us out. We've been fortunate enough to have co-located services in the past through grants through our private providers. But once those grants ended, then the service ended. So one of the things I would ask you to do along with funding this bill is to also look for a continuation of dollars that they don't go away in 2 years. And so I'm fortunate to be joined by Joe Park, my colleague, who will talk about specific issues in our school district. And thank you for your time.
Thank you, Superintendent. Ms. Park, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Joe Park, and I am a special services supervisor at South Washington County Schools with a responsibility also for supporting the mental health in the district. I also work at a local hospital with children and families doing mental health assessments and things like that, so I will be speaking from both lenses today. Today in our schools at South Washington County and across the state of Minnesota, I understand that you've learned a lot about the ACEs, the adverse childhood experiences, but in an average classroom we have 4/5 of our children in that classroom that have experienced at least one. And in the adverse childhood experience, that doesn't take into account other adverse experiences, such as the death in the family, bullying through social media, deportation of a family member, racism or institutional oppression, multiple military deployments, caretaking an elderly or individual sick family member, etc. We have seen in our school district, as other school districts across the state, an increase in the level of mental health and behavioral needs, an increase in the intensity of those mental health and behavioral needs related to mental health, and at a much younger age. We have this upcoming school year, we will have 48 new kindergarten students
because of their mental health and behavioral health needs will require a center-based or self-included inclusion classroom. In the last 2 to 3 years, our mental health school staff have done on average 1 to 2 suicide risk assessments per month in their secondary buildings. In the last year and this year, we are currently seeing our mental health support staff doing 3 to 4 emergency suicide risk assessments, with many of those students being referred to local hospitals. At the hospital that I work at currently, as a part-time person, we used to, when I started 13 years ago, have mental health assessments or behavioral health assessments once every few weeks. Frequently, I would work and not do one. Currently, when we have a shift in the evening or the overnights or the weekend, those workers are doing 3 to 7 mental health assessments per shift. So the increase in intensity and needs of our students has phenomenally exploded. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Representative Juergens, you have another testifier?
I do have one, so in the essence of time, I will forego any of my closing comments, and I'll have Mr. Steinmetz come up.
Certainly. Mr. Steinmetz.
Mr. Steinmetz is with the Washburn Center, who has been a recipient of these grants in the past.
Sir, please state your name for the record and proceed to your with your testimony. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Tom Steinmetz. I'm the CEO at Washburn Center for Children, and we're a community mental health center and essential community provider. We provide school, home, and clinic-based services to over 3,500 children and their families every year. And through the support of the School Linked Mental Health grants, we were one of the providers that were based in the two schools in Minneapolis that Dr. Sander mentioned, when there was just 5 schools starting off in Minneapolis back in 2005. Through the support of the School Linked Mental Health grants, we've been able to grow and expand from just those 2 schools in 2005 to now having school-based mental health therapists co-located full-time in 23 public schools in Minneapolis, in Eden Prairie, and in Bloomington. And I just want to share 3 results or very powerful outcomes that have been a direct result of these of the School Linked Mental Health grants. The first one is, we know that only about 1/3 of the kids who need mental health treatment are getting it right now. There's over 100,000 kids in Minnesota living with untreated mental health issues. And we also know that schools are often the place that mental health needs are first identified. But a big national study found that when schools try to refer to community agencies like Washburn, they only go through about 15% of the time. So even though the schools know which kids are struggling, they try to make a referral, they typically don't go through. Through our school-based mental health services, that connection rate is up to 85% now. So when a social worker, a teacher, is able to connect with a family and say that this child needs help, they're getting it 85% of the time. And we're able to make those services available and accessible, whatever type of insurance or lack of insurance that child has. We know from hearing directly from parents, 98% of the families that we work with, those parents would recommend Washburn Center for a friend who is in need of similar help. And then lastly, through a huge study that we did with the Center for Advanced Studies in Child Welfare at the U, we also know that the children served are making clinically meaningful improvement and progress with their mental health symptoms and their mental health functioning. So it truly is, through these school-linked mental health grants, we are reaching the kids and serving the kids who are otherwise falling through the cracks and silently struggling and suffering with anxiety, depression, trauma, and other mental health concerns. So they are working. What's needed is further investment. And to end very quickly, I'll just share one story that for me captures and puts a human face on all of this. There was a 8-year-old girl named Evie who was attending school in Eden Prairie. She suffered from debilitating anxiety to the point where she was not getting to school. She was basically homebound. Through the support of the School Linked Mental Health Services, we were able to connect with her parents and then work with her to help her manage her anxiety so she was able to attend school. We were then also able to provide consultation and support to her teacher to help her teacher make adaptations in the classroom to help Evie be able to manage her anxiety successfully in her classroom setting. So what happened? She started attending school. She started doing much better both behaviorally and academically. She learned how to manage her own individual anxiety, and her teacher learned how to be more supportive of other kids who are struggling with anxiety. The last thing I'll share is one of the best moments of my year last year was getting to introduce Evie at a fundraiser at First Avenue that we participated in. Evie, who had struggled with debilitating anxiety, got on stage at First Avenue and performed a song for an entire audience. That's the kind of progress that kids are able to make when they get the mental health support that they need. So thank you for your time, and thank you for your interest and support for school-based mental health.
Thank you, Mr. Steinmetz. We have limited time left. Any questions from members? Mr. Heller, do you have comments on House File 732 related to a grant program for school-linked mental health services? Please introduce yourself to the tape. Welcome to the committee and state your name for the record.
My name is Rick Heller, an official representative of Twice Exceptional and Twink Disability. Come to testify today on education policy on the 20th of March on 732 bill. Twice Exceptional is also considered high functioning autism. That was decided in 92 at the legislature. Just like you'll find Twice Exceptional in House File 1370 on line 1.18. One thing about crossing out education, there's a link between school-linked health, mental health grants. Is anybody aware that in 2006, the National Educational Association, the Teachers Union, created a paper called the Twice Exceptional Dilemma? One of the four types of disabilities that were targeted was EDB, Emotional Behavior Disturbance. And unless we make a connection with print disability regarding health literacy, the cause and effect, and what's causing anxiety and depression, currently there's no checkbox to consider on an IEP if the student has a print disability. They're supposed to get special protections. That's not noted on the current design form that the State Department created last year. Nor does it consider students that are print disabled, checkbox to consider that. Yet here we are spending the dollars about mental health here. And where's the connection between mental health and health literacy? These are the tough decisions these leaders need to make here. I suggest discussion needs to start very soon. And I had one experience with a mental health provider, and the school district would not allow him in the school because they thought it was educational related. That's all I have to say. Thank you for the opportunity to speak.
Thank you, Mr. Heller. Representative Juergens, we got 3 minutes to spare here if you've got any closing comments before we move your bill on to Ways and Means.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, for allowing me to bring this forward today. As you can see from the testifiers, this is a big issue, and this is a great opportunity for us to continue funding and to increase the funding for school-linked mental health. I appreciate your time today, and I appreciate the testifiers that came up today.
Thank you, Representative Juergens. With that, Representative Juergens renews his motion that House File 732, as amended, be referred to Ways and Means with the recommendation that it be referred on to the Committee on Health and Human Services.
That is my motion. Thank you.
Thank you very much. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you very much, Representative Juergens. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you intend to put in your budget any mental health linked grants or anything dealing with mental health?
So to the Edelson bill, you'll recall that the school linked mental health grants are found in the Health and Human Services budget, but that the grants that went to the intermediates 2 years ago were covered in this budget. So there's still that differentiation being discussed. Does that answer your question, Representative?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. With that, members, we are adjourned. Thank you very much.